event.
Who all was here last night? You know, it is funny though. Almost every time there's something like that and we don't go, it's the best ever. It really is.
I mean, you have to go to everything.
That's right. That's why you need to.
What was your excuse?
I was here.
Okay.
I've said the other times. But it's like, how many times have you left the service and went, man, that was the best ever? Now you seem like you can't say that, but so many hundred times. But it just seems like that's the case.
Well, you should be here always. He lives across the street. Like, it's a long commute. Everyone here. Well, we're going to talk about our stewardship tonight. And I'm Jay Tremblay. This is James Brown. I'm the stewardship pastor here. James is one of our elders. And what page should they be on? Do we know? Do y'all know? You know. I don't need to know. Okay, perfect. A lot of people ask me, well, what's stewardship? What do you do here? I handle a lot of things at the church. I've been at the church for about 10 years now. Started out as a life groups pastor, and now transitioned over to the stewardship pastor about 6 years ago, I guess. And I basically take care of the finances, take care of all of the adult ministry volunteers, like the greeters, the ushers, all the first contact ministries, communications, human resources, building scheduling, basically anything that doesn't fall into children's, youth, or men's or women's ministry comes my way. So it's like all of the administrative functions. And I love it. It's something different every single day. I'm married to my beautiful wife, Patty, for 26 years. She also works at the church. She's Pastor Steve and Pastor Mark's assistant. So if you ever want to talk to one of them, you're going to talk to her first when you call in. And we have two children, Natalie and Nathan, who are 25 and 21. So we're semi-empty nesters because they kind of live with us and they kind of don't. Because, you know, their address is our house, but they're never there, which is fine. I always say that I was born and raised Catholic. And is anyone Catholic in here or used to be Catholic in here? A couple people. So you know what I'm talking about because it was never really a choice for you. I was christened or baptized when I was a month old. I don't remember a thing about it. There's pictures and everything, but I made no personal decision at that point. So I really wasn't consulted on it. But I went through 13 years of Catholic school, and I was so ignorant as a Catholic. I had no idea there were other religions out there, none whatsoever. It is, you were Catholic or you weren't. So and we were very diligent, went to church every week, was an altar boy, you know, did all of that. But the whole time, probably from about fifth grade on, I started questioning. It's like, I really don't understand why I need to talk to a priest to talk to God. And I just struggled with that for so long. And then after high school, after I graduated, my parents ended up divorcing, and I just stopped going to church at that point. And fast forward a couple years later, met my wife. She was a Free Will Baptist. I'm like, what's that? And, you know, went to her church for the first time. I'm like, what's this? Because I was very used to the Catholic Church. A Catholic service is very liturgical. You're there for 45 minutes. You stand up, you sit down, you say specific prayers. You get a five-minute teaching, and you're done. Very little singing, a little bit, but not very much. And then when I walk into the Baptist church and you've got, you know, half hour to 40 minutes of singing with people raising their hands, what's that about? And then another 45 minutes of teaching where I'm like, oh my gosh, where's lunch? You know, it was a very different experience for me. So when we decided to get married, we got married in the Catholic church basically to appease my family. Patty was good. She just wanted to get married, and that was awesome. But after we got married, we didn't go to church because she didn't want to go to the Catholic church, and I didn't want to go to the Baptist church. And it wasn't until we had our daughter a couple of years later that I said, you know what, we probably really need to start going to church. So we did. She went to her church, and I went to my church. And we did that for a little while, probably 6 months, a year, something like that. And then I finally gave in and said, you know what, I need to be the leader of my family. So I started going to the Baptist church. Fast forward a couple of years, and we were in a worship service one time. The only seats available were in the front row. From me to you was the worship leader. And sit down, and we're with Patty's parents, and the worship leader is literally singing to me, Beverly. She is, like, drilling lasers into my soul. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I am so uncomfortable. I got up, and I left. Left my wife there with her parents, and I went and sat in the back row of the balcony. And that whole message, God was just raking me over the coals, just wrestling with me. And that happened to be a salvation message. So at the very end of the service, they called who wanted to receive Christ, and here I come from the back row of the balcony, walk right in front of my wife, and accept Christ right there. So, not the traditional salvation experience that most people may have had. But that was 1993, and just been on fire ever since. Love the Lord. We moved out here in 1998 from California, and found Grace Chapel in the fall of 2000. So we've been here for 16 years now. The moment we walked in the door, I went back to our other church at the time, said, I love you. We're leaving. Go on to where God's calling us. And I haven't been anywhere since. Haven't been to another church in 16 years, other than conferences or what have you. But just absolutely love Steve's passion, love that he tells or speaks the truth, and will do it unashamedly and with boldness, and couldn't be happier than being here. So it's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I'm James Brown. Godfather of souls. That's pretty bad. Yeah. I've been here 8 years. We moved up from Dothan, Alabama, southeast Alabama, and my daughters were at Belmont, and so we discovered Franklin through them being at college in at Belmont in whenever that was, 07, 08. We had been thinking that we wanted to move, came up here and just felt like this is where God wanted us to be, as I've heard the story over and over and over, different people. And we visited one church and stayed there. It was fine. We wound up buying some property across the street here, building a house, and didn't know what this place was for a long time. And, in fact, Kurt Beasley's story is the same way. Mm-hmm. He came by here all the time. It's like you're blinded, you know. I don't even see that place. So we visited, the first time we walked in the doors, just like Jay said, we knew that this was home. It was funny. The church that we had been at for the prior couple of years was very seeker friendly, if you know what that is. Mm-hmm. You know, you throw out a big net to don't offend anybody, you throw out this big net and, you know, hopefully you can grow disciples that way. But you don't hit anything very hard, and from my experience, I got really a lot of people that had been seasoned Christians, you know, you kind of need more stuff sometimes. You don't go very deep in most anything, and or hit subjects very hard. And the very first service we came to Grace, Steve had announced that they were going to three services, and he spoke on the homosexuality really hard. And I thought, oh my gosh, man, you'd never hear that where mm-hmm. I came from. And then it dawned on me. I told my wife. I said, he won't be needing that third service very long.
Way to bring the people in.
He did cancel that third service after 2 weeks, but not because of that. It was just too hard to try to get everything done that way. It just didn't work out very well. But I love, and I hope y'all do too, the fact that Steve does not shy away from anything that God lays on his heart. And I think that's very transparent. And I do love that. But I grew up Baptist. My wife grew up Baptist. We met at her church. No, we met at the mall. We dated at her.
Was that her church?
No.
Okay, good.
No, that was no. No, same chick. We met. I went. A girl that I went to school with worked there, and I went in to see her, and she was over here. And anyway, so I met her there. But we dated at her church, which was Webb Baptist Church, and I grew up First Baptist, and so we. Her church was a lot more freer than First Baptist. Yeah, you could raise your hands at Webb Baptist without getting looked at funny. And they were actually going through a real revival at that time, and it was really powerful what God was doing there. And I wound up finishing school and went to work with the bank, moved up to Huntsville, and we started going to Whitesburg Baptist Church, which was a big church, but it was much freer than First Baptist. Because, again, people would be raising their hands and actually looking like they're worshiping. And I forgot what it was, but it was just different. It was during that time that we were at Whitesburg. I had not experienced this in a long time, and I guess it's just because, you know, you're going to college and you're not in church as much and all that. But once we settled into Whitesburg, it was one of those deals where every stinking time you hear, "Just as I am," you just feel like, you know, God's calling you. It's like, come on, God, I got baptized when I was 16. You know, I went forward when I was 16. Why do I not have any peace in my salvation? Why do I have this conviction every time, just as I am, and just as I am is every Sunday? You know, so my boss at the time was a deacon there. And I said, he was up front in the prayer line, and I kind of told him my predicament, and so we went and found a little room off to the side, and he said, "Well, let's settle this." And I thought, "Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's settle this." So we just prayed, and he said, "Look, Scripture, here's the Scripture. You pray and you believe, and the rest of it's on God. If you're not saved, it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. It's God's fault." Mm-hmm. And I felt a lot of peace in knowing that I had done everything that I can do to get saved. You know, I had surrendered. I was sincere. I was all out. And if I left that night and I wasn't saved, it wasn't my fault. And honestly, it was a real time of victory for me in that. And part of that was just, I get mostly probably the enemy just not, is stealing my joy and my salvation. Really what it was, that's what I think it was. But anyway, that was a long story to get to that, but That covered that. Now, coming forward 15 or 20 years, my middle daughter went through the same thing. Hmm. The same thing. Never could get such freedom in her salvation experience. Just knowing that she's saved. She's always, you know, she'd be always crying. And it's like, honey, every Sunday? You know, when she's 20-something years old. No, she was 16, 17. And anyway, It's just funny how the devil can come in and steal your joy, and you don't even know exactly what that's about. But anyway, I'm lost in my testimony. But so here we are. I've been here. We moved here in 08, started coming here, and we haven't been anywhere else since either. So it's been fantastic.
Awesome. All right. So let's dig into our stewardship. A lot of people ask what stewardship is. When I say I'm the stewardship pastor, like, what is stewardship? Anyway. It's giving of your time, your talent, and your treasure. A lot of people think that it's just your treasure, but it's really your time and your talent as well. So we're going to talk about all three of those, mostly about treasure, but we'll be talking about all three of them for sure. So in the very first section, the truths about tithing, we're going to start there. I'm going to go through these pretty quickly and then just talk about the section as a whole. So number one, what is tithing? Tithe means a tenth part or a part, tenth part. Number two, what's the difference between a tithe and an offering? A tithe is giving the first tenth of my income. An offering is anything above the income, above the tithe. Number three, what's the purpose of tithing? Purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in your lives. Number four, when do I tithe? That's on a regular basis. Number five, where should I tithe? And that should be where you worship. Bring your whole tithe to my storehouse, the temple. You know, growing up Catholic, my example of tithing, I mean, first of all, we were never taught tithing. at all. So my example was watching my dad. And, you know, we'd go in every week, sit in the front row. Offering would come around. He'd take out his wallet, throw a $20 bill in the basket. And that's what I knew. So I thought that's what tithing was when it was introduced to me a little bit later in life. So go to the Baptist church, and, you know, we're married now. Patty and I are married, and the offering comes around. I take out my wallet, throw in a bill. I don't even think it was a 20, and I get a look. And I'm like, what? She's like, that's all we're giving? I'm like, yeah, how much do you want to give? So we start having this little conversation during the offering. So we'll talk about this later. So we pick it up later, and she's like, tithing is 10% of your income. I'm like, 10% of my income? You've got to be kidding. We can barely get by, and you want me to give 10% of my income? And I'm like, that's net, right? And she's like, no, it's gross. I'm like, what? So, I mean, I had a real struggle with this at first, and it took us a while to actually get to the point to give 10%. But like I said, it was never, ever taught to me. And I'll have people ask me that same question, gross or net. And really, tithing is about your heart. It really is. You don't need to tithe because you're being commanded to tithe. You should tithe because you're being convicted, or there's joy in doing so. It's what the Bible, what God commands of us, but we should be doing it with joy. If we're throwing that money in, just like, there you go, God. You know, there's not going to be a blessing in that for you. But if you're giving joyfully and sacrificially, which we'll talk about a little bit later, you will receive blessings in return. But that's not why we give. We don't give to receive a blessing. And tithing is really, we said that in number 5, we should be tithing where we worship. I get questions all the time of people asking, you know, I give to Mercy Ministries, or I give to charities. Can I count that as part of my tithe? That's not part of your tithe. The tithe is the first 10%. Anything above that is an offering, and that's what you give out to charity. So I'll see people, you know, write on their check, they'll designate, you know, I want this much going here, this much going here, this much going here, this much going here. And I had a conversation with someone about it, and they're like, that's my tithe, right? And I'm like, well, actually, the part that you said to the general offering, that's your tithe. Everything else, you're designating to something else, and that's an offering. They're like, oh. So the tithe is what you give to the church, and then it's the church's discretion as to where they use it. And it goes to all of those places anyway. I mean, Grace Chapel is incredible with what they give out to local and to international ministries. If you think about tithing in the sense, if we were to give out 10%, that would be our tithe to the community or whatever. We give out 30%. So 30% of what we take in to just the general tithes and offerings, we send right back out. So we practice what we preach here for sure. And then other people will ask, you know, when should I tithe? And, you know, I try to make it a habit of doing it as soon as I get paid. As soon as that payment comes in, then I'll either write the check. Actually, I do online giving, which I highly promote. It's a great way to give and not have to worry about writing the check later or leaving it at home on the counter or what have you, and then it's taken care of right there, and it actually comes out of my check, out of my bank account immediately, and I really don't have to worry about forgetting it. And then when it comes offering time on Sunday morning, I pray over it right there. It's like I knew I gave it, and then I'll make and I'll pray over it there as well as when I actually get paid. Any questions about tithing? I'm going to ask for questions kind of as we go, because I'm teaching another class right now. You wouldn't know it, but I've got a video playing for Financial Peace University, and I have to run back up there in about 45 minutes to make sure I finish that class. So I'm going to ask answer questions as we go, if that works for y'all. So any general questions about tithing? If not, you're going to have to ask them to James after you break up into small groups. And he's fully capable of answering.
I had this down later, but to back up the comment you made about the joy in giving, Deuteronomy 28:47 is that their land and animal production, the Israelites' land and animal production was cursed because of their bad attitude in bringing the tithe mm-hmm. to the storehouse. Yeah. So, yeah, it's all about your heart. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You can bring 100% to the Lord. with a bad attitude, you may as well have kept it.
Yeah.
But my parents were just like Jay's. You know, in fact, I honestly don't remember Daddy ever putting anything in the offering. That was Mom's deal, and it was probably a $20 bill too. Maybe kids' church, I don't know. But when I was 13, you know what those little cigar boxes used to be that when they printed them for school, and it said a school box, it was yellow. You know, they were cigar boxes. But so I had one of those, and I delivered pictures for Olin Mills. I had a paper out, and I washed dishes at a steakhouse. And I don't know why I did all that. I didn't have to. I mean, we didn't need the money, but I just like working, I guess. And I remember when I was having that little box and having all my income written down in the lid and what the 10% was, to the point that I remember looking at it one day, and, you know, I don't remember much. I've forgotten almost everything. But, you know, some things just stick in your mind. And I remember looking at that lid one day going, it struck me odd that day that I did that. You know, that I'm keeping up with my 10%. And I've done that ever since. I mean, I've always tithed. It's just not been anything that I've always struggled with. I'm like Jay. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's a real sacrifice. It doesn't always come easy. But I was glad that somebody in Kids Church taught us what tithing was about. And it made an impact on me. I've always considered the tithe holy. Some friends I just met from Bonifay. I was from Dothan. And I can't say too much because they'll know who I'm talking about. But I was at a church, and I know that the pastor led from... I know that he considered the church too much a business model, if you know what I'm saying. And when he told me, he said to me one time, the church is a business. And man, that flew in the face with me, because I mean, I've always been in business for myself, except for 2 years. And for him to say that the church was a business, I'm sure he had reasons for what he was trying to say. But that, accompanied with what I knew about him, just kind of spoke volumes to me as far as the error of what his whole concept of the tithe being holy. You know, it's not just a business where you... Anyway, needless to say, things didn't go well for him. You know, his church split. He's not even a minister anymore. And the tithe is holy, and the way you giving it is holy. And I'm glad that the Grace Chapel finds it holy on the receiving end. They honor it as being holy. And Jay and Ron and Steve, I know that when they're handling the tithe, they handle it as holy, as unto the Lord. And that's one of the reasons I think Grace is blessed financially, because of the way that they honor the tithe. That's not even on my sheet.
You're right here.
All right, number one. My stewardship reflects my commitment to discipleship. I'll chase the rabbit again. Y'all do realize giving is more is for you. Mm-hmm. Giving is for what it does to you. It's not, God can accomplish everything He's going to accomplish whether you give or not. Mm-hmm. Giving is for you. The faster you understand that and get it in your getter, the better off you're going to be. Giving, number two, is giving makes me more godly. Number three, giving draws me closer to God. Number four, giving is the antidote to materialism. I believe that materialism and sacrificial giving are diabolically opposed to each other. How can you be into materialism if you're a sacrificial giver at the same time? I don't think you can. Number five is giving strengthens my faith. the verse written down, but in Malachi, you know, there's a verse. It's the only verse in the Bible where God challenges you to test you with the tithe and see if he will not bless you till your cup runneth over. Mm-hmm. If you've never done that, and I hope you have, how many people have ever been here and was able to participate in one of the sacrificial givings?
Don't get ahead of yourself.
Is that on?
That's mine.
Oh. It's not on mine.
I know.
All right. Okay. All right. I won't get into that. But, you know, when you give sacrificially, there's something real significant about that. And anyway, I'll get into that again myself and later. Jay's already talked about tithing, grosser net. And again, it's about heart. It's a heart issue. It's number six, giving is an investment in eternity. Number seven, giving blesses me in return. That's Malachi 3:8 that I said I didn't have the verse for. Try me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that would not be room enough to receive. Number eight, giving makes me happy. A lady ran a soup kitchen in New York City, Manhattan, and it was huge, huge soup kitchen. I mean, her lines went on. She fed thousands. And that somebody that I know, I can't remember now, but knew her and asked her this, so it wasn't too secondhand. What experience did she have that stood out in her years of feeding the soup kitchen, the soup lines? And she said, well, you know, she goes, we fed tens of thousands. I don't know how many, lots. And she goes, I've asked people, I ask them all the time. I work the line and try to meet as many people as I can. And I ask them all the time, you know, are you a Christian? And she goes, I can't tell you how many of them are Christians. You know, I've met pastors. I've met deacons. I've met Sunday school teachers in the soup line. But she said, not one time have I ever asked anybody, were they faithful tithers ever? That they said, yes, they were. Not one time had she ever had somebody that said they were always a faithful tither that wound up in that soup line. And I thought, that is too cool. But anyway, that's you.
All right, next section, how God wants me to give. And it's with the right attitude. Number one, I give expectantly. Number two, I give willingly. Number three, I give cheerfully. And number four, I give sacrificially. Hmm. Who was here for the sacrificial offering that we took at Good Friday? So about half of you. Okay. Grace Chapel has a huge history of sacrificial giving, and it goes back to the very beginning, 22 years ago, when we used to meet over at Hillsborough School on Pinewood Road. There was a point where Pastor Steve had gone into the principal and said, hey, we're grateful that you let us use your facility. How can we bless you? And at the time, they really needed a playground for the kindergartners to play in at recess. So Steve went back to the church and said, you know, there's this need that the church has or that the school has, and we want to be able to bless them. So he put the ask out there to the church, and one offering they raised, I think it was like $15,000 is what it cost. And they raised that in one offering. We're talking probably 30 or 40 people that were going to the church at the time. It was very small. And they ended up doing all the labor. They put it together, and they blessed the school right away with that. And then there was a series of different times where more asks were made of the church. 2002, we needed to buy the property that we're sitting on right now. And I think we were maybe 250, 300 people at the time, and we needed to raise a little over $300,000, I think. We raised $375,000 in that one offering, so we were able to buy this without having to get a loan from the bank. 2004, we had what was called the Resource Revolution. It was a conference taught by Pastor James Ryle, the late James Ryle. And it was a Friday night and a Saturday. And there were about, I want to say it was 50 families that were represented there in that. Actually, no, there were about 30 families represented that year. And he taught on sacrificial giving that night. And you know, sacrificial giving, it's called sacrificial giving for a reason. It's because it hurts to give it. It's not just giving willingly. It's like, here you go, God. You know, I've got X amount of dollars in the bank, and I'm giving you a portion of that. It's giving until you really feel it. So he taught that night, and then he challenged us. He said, tomorrow when you come back, we're going to ask you to give sacrificially, to put into practice what we just learned tonight, without knowing where this money was going to go to. And it wasn't going to stay within the walls of Grace Chapel. We're just going to ask you to give. So we went home. Patty and I both prayed about a number, and then we got back together, and lo and behold, God gave us both the same number. So we knew it was of God, so we gave that. And I'll get to the blessing part in just a minute, but that night when we got back together as a group and we did the offering, in that one offering we raised $62,000, one offering with 30 families. It was a pretty big deal. And then the next day on church service, we brought in a family that was traveling, I think, from Florida back from vacation or something, and there was a fatal car accident. The father and one of the children went to heaven as a result. So we gave that entire $62,000, all of it, to that family, just to be able to bless them.
But Steve didn't raise that for that. He didn't, or did he?
Steve and James knew what the money was going for. Right. No one else knew.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think James found the family. But as a result, that same week, three different things happened to us. First of all, the very next day, on that Monday, I got a promotion, a substantial promotion and increase in my salary. It was like it wasn't out of the blue, but it was a very nice blessing for sure. The very next day, on Tuesday, I was able to get a brand new truck, and my car was like on its last legs of about 10 or 12 years. Later that week, without even knowing that my wife and I had gone through this conference, we had received a loan, my wife's business, from her mother a few years before. And it was a substantial amount, actually. And she called on it Thursday and said, you know that loan that we gave you? That's paid off. You don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Like, what? All of that far exceeded what we gave that previous previous weekend. So God immediately just showed off and was like, out of your obedience, we're going to bless you right back. The very next year, we did the same conference, and there were 50 families that year, 2005. And with that offering, we raised $148,000 with those 50 families. I don't know if any of you remember, this was at the beginning of the Iraq War, but Daniel Pearl was a journalist and was beheaded at the time. We brought in his wife and daughter and gave them all of that money. She was just starting college, so it paid for her college, basically. And Grace Chapel, 2006, we had already been in the sanctuary. We'd been in this property for about 3 years, but we were far busting out of the seams, for sure. It was basically, at the time, it was the sanctuary and just the surrounding rooms around it. So it was a little square, basically. And so we needed to build this whole second wing, which was the youth rooms, the fellowship hall, all down there where you have breakfast. And Steve, at the beginning of January of 2006, said, we're going to be doing this at the end of the year. We're going to have a sacrificial offering. We need to build. You need to prepare. And in that one offering, Thanksgiving weekend, we raised $2.8 million. We were believing for two, brought in $2.8 million. One offering. It's still mind-blowing to me. 2011, we, for this building that we're sitting in, one offering brought in $3.8 million. And then recently on Good Friday of this year, we purchased some land next door to us, another 100 acres, and we brought in, that night, we brought in $2.8 million, but to date, we brought in $3.3 million. So this church is generous beyond belief. And you can see in how God's blessed them, and it's just amazing to be a part of. You don't hear Pastor Steve talk about tithing or offerings or sacrificial offerings very often from the pulpit. But when he does, there's usually a response. And I like classes like this and like Financial Peace University and others where we can talk about that and really educate people on being able to give that way. Next section.
When do you need to leave?
What's that?
When do you need to leave?
Oh, I've got about 15 minutes, so keep going.
We went to an Assembly of God church for about 9 years when we first moved back to Dothan, and when Jay was talking, it reminded me when we had a testimony time. You know, it was a couple thousand people church. Testimony time, people stand up giving testimonies for how God's blessed them and all. And I'll never forget, this girl stands up in the choir of all places. All eyes are on the choir. And she stands up and she said that they wanted a vacation and didn't have the money for the vacation. I'm just telling you, don't be this girl. And didn't have money for the vacation, so they bought a new car because it had a rebate. So God blessed them through this rebate so that they can go have this vacation. I'll never forget, it took that pastor forever to figure out how to recover from what she just said. You know, you could hear crickets forever.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway. Anyway, one of the pastors at that church that I was real close with, I was years later, we had started a vineyard church, and I was talking with him, told him I was speaking on tithe, and he said he didn't believe in tithe. And I really respected him, and I didn't question him, and I just didn't verbally ask him at that moment, what in the world are you talking about? But years later, I did. I said, "What you told me one time you didn't believe in tithe." What? And he was Jay's position. He was the stewardship guy at the church. He was the financial guy.
And he's not believing in tithe.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. I mean, that. But anyway, the years went by before I actually asked him what did he mean by that. And he said, "Well," he goes, "to tithe means that basically you're saying only 10% of what you have is God's." And he said, "I don't believe that." He said, "I believe it. You know, you need to have the belief that everything you have is given to you by God, and it is God's, and you're stewarding it for Him." And I thought, "Oh gosh, thank you, Jesus." But anyway, number one, ultimately, God is the one who provides me with all that I have. Hey, that was on point. How about that? My possessions belong to God, and He's provided them for me to use as a steward. My treasure includes proper care of my body. Next. I pay special attention to those relationships that God partners me with and those who share a common vision for kingdom advancement. Do we all know who our mission field is? I mean, it is for some folks. You know, you train in missions and God will send you somewhere. But for the vast majority of it, our mission field is just this. It's the relationships that God has partnered you with. It's the folks that you work with. It's the folks that you go to church with. It's the folks down the street. And it steps one, I mean, yeah, the other, on Sunday morning, a lady in the back, I think Ron Gonzer said, or Rick Wood said, you know, we always have this thing when you're thinking about being called to missions. Oh, God, I don't want to go to Africa. Everybody gets called to the mission field. You know, you have to go to Africa somewhere. And then he went on to talk about how your mission field is the people you work with. Mm. She said, "Oh, God, I'd rather go to Africa." Isn't that true? I mean, that's kind of true. You know, sometimes you feel that way. Oh, God, send me to Africa. It would be easier than me having to witness and to the people that I work with. God forbid. number five, when deciding where to and whom to give, listen to the Holy Spirit and obey. How about that would be a novel concept? Mm-hmm. Number six, offerings which are given above the tithe may be given to the poor, to the needs of those in God's family, and to the advancement of God's kingdom and purposes. Next, giving God my time. Time is a gift. You know, and so seldom do we think, you know, the two most valuable, or two of the most valuable things we have are your time and your money. And most of the time you don't think of it that way. And most of the time we're poor stewards of both. You know, really. We're poor stewards of time is probably the worst. You know, in our prayer last night, we were talking about listening to the Lord, and I thought, you know, if we took a minute, 1 minute, for every hour we watch TV a day to just listen to the Lord, the nation wouldn't even be in the shape it's in right now. But how little time do we actually spend seriously being quiet? Because most of us feel like to pray means to talk. And I'm preaching to myself too, but seldom do we ever take the time to listen in quiet. And you learn, because I know all of you, because I'm taking names, are taking steps too, because you'll delve into this in steps two, learning how to read, how to pray, and how to hear the voice of the Lord. And you have to be quiet. You can't talk your way. Well, you can't talk and hear God at the same time. Well, that's not exactly true, but anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say something, you're talking about the mission and stuff, but my kids the other day, there's this woman in my neighborhood who's struggling with a drinking problem, and I know she has it, and she's also going through divorce, and for a while I kind of stayed away because I felt like it kind of was just not a safe place, but recently I just felt called to stop by, and I stopped by just recently, and I knocked on her door, and she was crying. And I said, hey, I'm just going to give you a hug. And she said, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I said, because she lives on my way to my house. And I just, all the time I look over there and just keep going. And she said, you always stop by at the right time. And I don't stop by every time. But there's some times where I just really feel pulled to stop by. And my kids asked me, like, Mom, you started doing a lot for her. I said, no. I said, but something's pulling my heart, and I know she needs somebody. And so I just go, and I just sometimes just stop and just give her a hug. Mm-hmm. You know, I just feel like that's what God's, you know, she's struggling, and I've been through divorce and stuff, and, you know, a lot of times women need to know, you know, you got someone there for you.
Yeah. If not who, or if not you, then who? Mm-hmm. You know, if you didn't do it, then who was going to do it?
Yeah.
So it's awesome that you did.
I think a lot of people in the neighborhood have shunned her because they kind of know that she has a drinking issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, you know, the more you do that, the better you are at hearing God call you to places like that. Yeah. It's just the way it is. It's like all my kids hate this, and my wife even. I mean, she hates it. I don't do it to her that much. But, you know, when we're out, like especially in a big store, all I have to do, my kids are 29, 27, and 18. And I did this the other day. My 29-year-old came. We're in a big store, and all I have to do is go, and that's not a lie. I can't whistle, but I'll just go, and I don't care where they'll hear, and they hate it, but they'll come because they know that's me. And my middle daughter hates it especially because we're always downstairs, and her bedroom's way upstairs, and I'll do it, and she hates it. She might be just said, stop doing that. She hates that. I said, well, she always comes. But, you know, they've trained to hear. They know what that little tweet is. And it's the same. The more you listen to God, the more you can understand it's His voice when you respond. Mm-hmm. And so I can't explain that. It's supernatural. Some friends of ours that used to speak at the Vineyard was a retired colonel. I'll never forget, we'd always go to the Red Lobster restaurant after church most of the time. And he was speaking that Sunday, so he came. Him and his wife. So we're all funneling into the restaurant, and we're all sitting down. It's like 15 or 20 of us, and Rich was not there. And the pastor said, well, where's Rich? And I said, well, I don't know. I thought, well, let me go find Rich. So I go back there, and the same waitress that we've been that waited at our table every week, you know, she's bawling her eyes out. Rich is a pastor, same thing. He felt the Lord say, let's see if there's anything you can pray. Ask her if she needs prayer for something. So he took her discreetly over to the side, you know, and just said, honey, I just feel like the Lord said, pray with you if you have any need of prayer. And she just bawled. You know, she just, you know, and I don't know what her stuff was. And I thought, isn't that funny? We've had that same waitress all these years. How many times were we not submissive enough to hear the voice of the Lord tell us to pray with this lady? Or maybe it was never needed till that day. I don't know. Same thing happened to his wife. They go in Waffle House. There's this big biker dude. That same weekend, bald-headed biker dude sitting there at Waffle House. And Rich and his wife walk in. Rich felt like he needed to say something to that guy when he walked in. He goes, No. So he goes on, sits at his table, and his wife wasn't with him. And he turns back, and he goes, oh, God. And Delane is at the table, sitting beside that guy, with his face in his hands, bawling his eyes out. And then he's telling me how convicted he felt, because he was supposed to call, he was supposed to pray with that guy, and he knew it when he passed it, passed the dude. But, you know, it's hard sometimes. But anyway, it's cool when you can know when the voice of the Lord's speaking to you and be submissive to that. Where did I leave off? Number one.
Two.
So I submit my time to God so that he can order my day for kingdom purposes. I spend my time based on my values. My values determine my priorities. And then God has determined that one day in seven is to be the Sabbath.
Next section, giving God my talents. Number one, God has uniquely created me and given me the various talents, abilities, and giftings for his glory. Number two, I ask myself, what are the natural abilities God has given me, and what are my acquired skills? Then number three, I'm a steward who one day will give an account of how I have used what God has given me. You know, outside of working at the church, I use volleyball as a means to reach people. I love volleyball. I've been playing it for 30-some years. And this is my way to be able to use what God's given me. He's given me a natural talent to play this game, but to be able to reach people outside the walls of the church. And when I first started playing volleyball, before I was saved, I wasn't the best sport. You know, I might have been that taunting person, might have not use the best language, which a lot of the people that I play with now are the same way. But over the years, as I got saved and as God started transforming me, people started to notice that, and they would ask questions. It's like, what's different about you? Oh, well, let me tell you. This was a perfect way for me to be able to share what God did in my life. So I'll see people that are having a bad day. You know, they walk into the gym, you can just see it. It's all over them. And I'll stop before they walk on the court. It's like, hey, what's going on? Can I pray for you? And I'm like, what? Yeah, I'd love that. And there are people that go to this church as a result of meeting me on the volleyball court. So I use that as an opportunity to be able to reach people. So all of us have different talents. Something it might be your talent at work. You know, you might be in the financial industry or something. We've got a loan officer here at the church that he uses that. Every time that he closes a loan with someone, he talks to them about Jesus and prays with them. And it's just great. So think about what God's given you as far as your time, as far as your talents, and how can you use that to impact his kingdom? You know, there's a wide open mission field out there. And it doesn't have to be here at church that you're spending all of your time with God. You should be doing it outside of the church for sure. And you should be reaching people outside and bringing them in. So I encourage you to do that. I actually have to run in a couple of minutes. Any questions before I run out of here?
Yeah,
before you break up into small groups.
Don't be shy.
Good, you get them all.